Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Good Friday 2016, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 65 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York, and we welcome you to a very special edition of the program All About Television. Very special in part, large part, because of the guests we have right now live from London. And we invite you to be part of the program. If you have a question or comment for our guests or other things later in the show, you give us a ring, and here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. We got chat room in business right now on our Blog Talk Radio site. It's Simon Apple 04 by name, and Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, is already in the room. So use the phone or the chat room. Either way, we hear you. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you right now. Coming up later in the program, we'll have news notes about a lot of renewals at CBS, a cancellation at HBO, a new show from Apple TV to be specific, and the Daytime Emmy Award nominations. And we'll also spend considerable time paying tribute to three of the people who passed away over the last 48 hours that all made great TV roles. Comedian and TV series creator Gary Shandling, The Waltons creator Errol Hanner, and TV personality and baseball announcer Joe Garagiola. We'll get to all of that. We'll give you the opportunity to call and chat room your thoughts later in the program. But first, 2 years ago, PBS devoted an episode of Great Performances to one of the great groups of the British invasion of the 1960s, one of the great musical trends of all time, the Dave Clark Five. The episode was The Dave Clark Five and Beyond, Glad All Over, based on their first big hit. Tonight, PBS is replaying that show in many of its markets because of a major breakthrough, which was the way the Dave Clark Five was on the Ed Sullivan Show, the greatest variety series of all time, arguably. Over the course of just a few years, the Dave Clark Five made 18 appearances on that program, more than any other performer. Joining us live from London in an interview exclusive, shortly after 8 p.m. local time, Dave Clark. David, it's an honor to have you here.
My pleasure, Simon.
Before Great Performances came calling nearly 2 years ago to do this episode on you and your band's career, did you get a lot of requests from other producers, either where you are or in the United States, to do something about your music and the influence it's had on so many people?
Yeah, many times over the years. And I always felt that, what we did, we were very proud of. And I didn't want to go any further. But when we got the Hall of Fame and Tom Hanks inducted us into the Hall of Fame, Tom and Bruce Springsteen and Steve Van Zandt said, you've got to do a documentary on your life. And I wasn't sure. And they said, well, look, you owe it to history, you owe it to yourself, but more than anything, you owe it to the boys. And sadly, Mike Smith had died just a few days before we were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I thought, yeah, I've got to do it for them as well as everybody, and myself. And I didn't believe it would turn out as well as it did.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that unlike other specialist kind where usually an outside producer comes in or an in-house producer comes in and puts it together, you had a big hand in making this episode happen.
Yes. I produced it and directed it. But it worked itself because everybody that came on told their story, which I think made it more believable. And I was gobsmacked. I was very moved by what they said.
What was the most important point that you wanted this episode to make about your music, about the group's impact on not just music of that era of the 60s, but since?
I don't know, really. I mean, I just thought it was right to put the record straight, so to speak. you know, now the whole industry's changed, what with the internet and websites and all these things, and people, unfortunately, you get this with, I've spoken to Paul McCartney and lots of people, you actually get this with lots of people come up and they start reinventing you, and they weren't even born then. And I thought, well, it's, you know, we owe it to our fans and the people that keep on to us to do these special things, is to, you know, make it sort of put the record straight, so to speak.
And what do you say as being the record straight? What about the record did you straighten out here?
Sorry, what did I?
Yeah, when you say you wanted to set the record straight, what was,
well,
the record? What is the record
straight in the sense of telling what our career was, where we weren't one-hit wonders, where we were just plucked out of a crowd and you got a hit record. We paid our dues, playing to all the dives and clubs, and then onto the American air bases in the UK. And then by that, we gradually got better. And then in the end, we were playing to 6,000-7,000 people a night. And then we got a record deal. The rest is history. But nobody gives you anything. You know, you've got to work for it. And my feeling is it's very easy not to succeed at the beginning, but you keep getting brick walls come up in front of you. But to me, you've got to keep going until you eventually knock those brick walls down. And then hopefully it all works. I mean, we're glad all over. I've always said to people, if it had been 3 months earlier or 2 or 3 months later, would it have been as big? It might have been a number one, but it ended up being the biggest selling single in the UK. It knocked the Beatles off their biggest selling single in the UK, and the rest is history. But it wasn't planned. And, you know, Paul McCartney and I, we joke about it, you know.
Well, was the whole idea of the group, at least at the beginning, was to have a very drum-driven sound? I mean, one of the things that is so remarkable about at least your first hits, Glad All Over, Any Way You Want It, Bits and Pieces, they all were connected by your drumming and a very drum-driven sound, as opposed to the Beatles, which was more of guitar, more to a band, very elegant, you know, lyrics and so forth, and the Rolling Stones, which was the sort of raw energy. You were sort of like were a mix of
the
two.
Yeah, the more
because
blues.
Because you had
more
drum energy, plus you had, you know, the very catchy lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, I always felt that I wanted to get a good live sound. And we were, as I said, we started off playing all the dives, and then we got better. And then when at the end we were playing to like 6,000-7,000 people a night at the Royal Tottenham, which is in the movie. And I felt you needed audience participation. So when you did a drum thump, the audience stamped with it or whatever. It's to make you feel good. There was no hidden message. It was feel-good music, and I felt that was important. You know, that's what it's all about. And because I produced the records myself, I had a very definite way that we wanted to go. I mean, it could have been disastrous. Who knows? But I just felt it needed to be, you know, something that people could relate to.
Also, something else about your early work was reverb. There was always that, and Glad All Over, particularly Any Way You Want It, there was like that reverb for a couple of seconds. When you stopped, it was like, hey, I was all right.
Yeah.
There was like that reverb sound, and that was also pretty distinctive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, on Glad All Over, it wasn't as obvious. There were just little bits on the drum hits with the guitar doubled up underneath. But on Any Way You Want It, I purposely went for when the boys sung All Right, I wanted to repeat it, all right, all right, all right, you know, and we were just experimenting. The great thing about those days, we were all working class, and we didn't have any preconceived ideas. You just recorded what you felt was right, and you didn't have somebody, because we were independent, we didn't have somebody breathing down your back and saying, no, you've got to do this, and you must do it that way, because in those days, I always remember Elvis Presley saying to me, you know, because when we first went on television, like the Beatles and John Lennon, and people asked them questions, and they answered honestly, and they thought it was funny and whatever, but they were just being real, being themselves. And I remember Elvis saying to me, you know, we were told what to say, what to wear, where, what to, and what to say. And I think the good thing about the English groups at that early stage, we just went out and said what we felt, you know. And I think that, fortunately, Americans warmed to that.
Dave Clark, the founder and the leader of the Dave Clark Five, is our guest live from London this half hour on a special Good Friday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New York. And we're doing it because PBS is representing the great performances episode, The Dave Clark Five and Beyond, Glad All Over. Depending on where you are, it will run either tonight at 9 or 10 o'clock. Here in New York, it runs at 9 o'clock, the 2 hours episode, 9 to 11 p.m. local time. Everywhere else in most markets, it will be on between 10 and midnight. And for some stations, they'll run it either later in the weekend, so you have to check your local listings for the PBS station area and when they're running this great performances episode. If you have a question or comment for Dave, give us a ring, 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere. Catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio. You can also use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, in the room. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, our lead guest will be Natalie Chavez. She's the executive producer of the new sci-fi series, Hunters, which premieres on April 11th. And then on a special edition coming your way less than 24 hours later, 20 years after the Cartoon Network debuted the Powerpuff Girls, they are back in the city of Townsville and fighting crime again in all new episodes, premiering on April 4th. Next Tuesday, at a special time, 1 hour earlier, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, we will have an exclusive interview with the executive producers of the new version, Nick Jennings and Bob Boyle. And 1 week from today, our special lead April Fool guest will be the host and now executive producer of Idiot Test on GSN, the one and only Ben Glebe. That's all coming up next week, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, Monday and Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, next Tuesday, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. When people pose the trivia question, the group that made them, or the performer that made the most appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show, the easy answer would be the Beatles, Elvis Presley, Topo Gigio, Alan King, Stiller and Mara. They don't think of the Dave Clark Five. Did that surprise you that you and your group had that record for the most appearances on Ed Sullivan's show?
Yeah, it does now. You know, at the time, it just all hit off, and you don't think about that. It's years later. And when you think in those days, I mean, the Ed Sullivan Show had over 70 million viewers every Sunday night, and that's an amazing amount of people. It means you went into practically every American home, and you couldn't do that today, even with the biggest shows. You wouldn't get half of that, you know. It was amazing. You know, looking back, we were all lucky, you know, all that, the Beatles, us, you know, having that amazing vehicle of Ed Sullivan.
And then why did he bring you back so often? What was it like working with Ed Sullivan and his producers to have so many appearances?
I suppose we were popular. Otherwise, I can't think of any. Looking back, I can't think of any other reason why. I mean, in the first 2 years, we had 15 consecutive top 20 records in the U.S. charts. That's more than any other artist in the world apart from the Beatles. And maybe that's why. I got no idea, you know, but my God, it was an amazing vehicle to have. And we were fortunate enough where we ended up selling over 100 million records. I mean, those were in the days where all those British acts were selling millions and millions of records.
Were there any problem in terms of coming up with songs to play on the program, given you know, the way records were going and the fact that in some cases you were on the Sullivan Show several weeks at a time?
Yeah, no. I mean, he was very, very good and very generous to us, and whatever was coming out on record, he would let us play. And if we had an album coming out and we wanted to play one of the album tracks, I mean, no, we were very, very lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Along with The Sullivan Show, you also made a movie, which in England was called Catch Us If You Can, based on another one of your hits, which was the lead song of the film. Here in the United States,
that was
released by Warner Brothers.
Film, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Mm-hmm. No, Catch Us If You Can was written especially for the movie.
Right. And in the United States, Warner Brothers released the movie as Having a Wild Weekend. And the thing that people remember now about the film is A, it was a much stronger film, I think, than people thought of at the time. And secondly, you and your group helped get a phenomenal filmmaker off the ground named John Borman, who directed that movie. That
Correct.
Was his first film.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted
what was it
to
like?
Do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to do a musical, so it was a dramatic film and really a look in at the music industry, but with the soundtrack. Originally, it was going to be Catch As If You Can for the World, but 4 months before we opened in the States, somebody registered a play on Broadway called Catch As If You Can, and Warner Brothers panicked that it might end up in a dispute, and so we decided to change the title to another song we had in the movie called Wild Weekend. I think Catch As If You Can was a better title. Unfortunately, the Broadway play never came to pass, so we could have kept it as Catch As If You Can. But that's life. It was successful in America, and John Borman was an unknown director that I really loved his work. I watched the documentary on television and thought he'd be totally right for the film. And in those days, again, being independent, they were saying, oh, you can't use an unknown director. But I think you've got to give people a chance, you know, and John was great for the film.
Mm-hmm. When the time came to put this film together, did you first see A Hard Day's Night, the Beatles film with Richard Lester, and then decided, I don't want to do that same kind of movie, which is sort of a satirical autobiography of us as a group. We want to do something, as you say, that's more dramatic, had some things to say about life.
I don't think it's anything to do with A Hard Day's Night, because I think when we first came up with the film, Hard Day's Night hadn't come out. But on all the musicals in those days, especially with Elvis, who I was a great fan of, they all had a sort of formula. And I thought, you know, you really needed to do something different. And that's the reason that I went in for a dramatic film, which I thought would be more off the wall. Fortunately, I mean, Pauline Kael of The New Yorker and Bosley Crowder of New York Times called it the best young film of that generation, you know, which again blew us away, because you don't know. When you're making records or films or whatever, or the same as the documentary that's being shown this evening, you do what you feel is right, but you do it in a way that you have to not be selfish. You've actually got to think, will people enjoy this? It mustn't be self-indulgent. And you only know that when people hear a record on the radio and they buy it, or they see a movie and they like it and they go to see it, or in the case of our documentary, I mean, we've got amazing reviews, which I felt very blessed at having that. But you don't know. It could all go the other way around.
Yeah. Terry Classy Movies, in say a few weeks ago, replayed Having a Wild Weekend here in the United States, and it's the first time I saw the film since I originally saw it when Warner Brothers released it in U.S. theaters back in 1965, 66.
But you were too young.
Yeah, and in fact, I wanted you to explain a scene for me, the end of the film, where, you know, you're there with, I think, the person you wanted to love, and you're both on that, like, sandy dune, and there's all these people, like, running around all over the place. You got the song in the background, the very melancholy final song. I'm curious what it was like to shoot that scene, and what kind of feedback did you get afterward? What kind of reaction did you get afterward?
Well, it was different, because they always, in a movie, it's always going to have a happy ending, and the guy always gets the girl. And we went the reverse, you know, whereas they found out that it was all a big publicity plot to market a product, which wasn't us. And that's the reason the character I played walked away and left it. You know, he didn't want to know. So it was not trying to go by the tried and tested way. You know, a guy doesn't always get the girl. That's in life, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what made this movie so distinctive, you know, compared to what the Beatles did with Hard Day's Night and then Help, and then what other groups in your genre, like Jerry and the Pacemakers, did, or Freddie and the Dreamers did, or Herman's Hermits, Mrs. Brown, You Got a Lovely Daughter. I think it was Jane Pace who did Ferry Across the Mersey, which was a similar film, by the way, in terms of tone to what Having a Wild Weekend was all about. But this was the movie that I think really delineated you and your group both as, and I thought that perhaps out of the film you would have an interesting film career. because this was your movie debut as an actor, and it was also Borman's debut, as we mentioned before, as a director.
Sure. What you say? Why didn't I have a movie career?
Right.
Well, actually, mm-hmm. after we made it, Warner Brothers is in the days of in America of thousands of fans outside the hotel, and they came to the Warwick Hotel in New York and set up a screening room and showed me a film called Body and Soul, which was by I think it was a 1940s or 50s movie star, John Garfield, and mm-hmm. They wanted to remake it with me in the lead. I felt at that stage boxing had gone on to another level, because then in 64 you had Muhammad Ali, who was totally different, and I just felt, and Paul Newman had made an amazing film called Someone Up There Likes Me, and I felt it wasn't exciting enough for me to go forward with it. So who knows? But I said no, and I was more interested at that stage in playing the group with the group, and I didn't want to break up the group by going off for 3 or 6 months doing a movie and promotion. So I decided, no, you know, think about it later.
The Day Clark 5 and Beyond, glad all over. This episode of Great Performances, first made 2 years ago, is back tonight. Depending on where you are, it will either run here in New York on Channel 13, WNET, and I believe WIW may be also in New York at 9 o'clock, 9:11 Eastern Time. Other PBS stations will run it at Great Performances regular time at those stations, which is 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Dave Clark of the Dave Clark 5 is live with us this half hour from London on the special Good Friday edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, the live duet. If you have a question or comment for Dave, ring it in. And we do have a call coming in, 646-652-2906. Or you go to chat room, Simon Apple 04. My name is welcome guests 913 and 933 into the room. Again, coming up on Tuesday on a special edition of our program, 1 hour earlier, our guests will be from the Powerpuff Girls Revival on Cartoon Network, executive producers Nick Jennings and Bob Boyle. That's coming up next Tuesday, 1 hour earlier than normal. Remember the new time change. It's 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, an hour earlier than normal, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And now let's take this call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from?
Hi, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, it's great to have you. Let's get you on the line right now with Dave Clark.
Hello, Mr. Clark.
Hi, Rick.
First, I wanted to say, especially the song Catch Us If You Can was one of the songs that really made me want to become a drummer. I just used to play that song over and over and over again. As soon as it would finish, I'd start it back up again. So I just wanted to point that out. So thank you.
My pleasure.
And so I wanted to ask you kind of a question, whether you have any advice for bands and musicians today, especially like how it seems you've been kind of protective of your music over the years, and it hasn't been put out there as much as certain other bands that you were larger than. So like any advice or anything you would do different and, you know, towards newer bands and bands coming up nowadays?
Sure. I mean, things change. I mean, in those days, we went from originally on vinyl, and then what happened, unbeknown to us, the record company started to remanufacture it in what they called electronically processed stereo, which is, excuse me, is a lot of crap, really. Because what it is your mono track on the left-hand side and the mono track on the right covered with echo. So the reason our masters was off for a long period of time, so I wanted to clear the market of them and then bring it out on CD as we did later on. But with new groups today, I mean, it's a whole different era. I mean, you don't sell physical records anymore, not in volumes. It's all on iTunes or whatever. I think it's exciting. I mean, what's happened in England, I think it's the same in America. It's more, in my era, it was you had to be a good live band before you stood a chance. And that was great. And that's why the groups in the 60s, a lot of them, were so good, is because we played to all the dives where they threw beer cans and whatever at you. And it made you good. And I think with a new group, all I've got to say is, if you believe in it, you've got to stick at it. There's always too many generals. people all telling you an opinion. If you believe in what you're doing, you've got to stick at it. And if it's not successful at the beginning, just carry on until it is. And it's a little thing down to luck. It's being in the right place at the right time. And who knows when that is. But you can't rely on that. You've got to go and go with what you believe in. And hopefully it'll all fall into place. If not, you've at least can't go back in life saying, if only I'd done this, if only I'd done that. You have to follow your dream. And then if it doesn't work, then you go on to the next thing.
Well, thanks for your advice. And it's totally an honor to speak with you, Mr. Clark.
What's the name of your group?
Well, right now I'm not in a group. I've been in groups and bands in the past. And now I'm working more in television and actually starting up kind of like groups for some of the shows, some of the TV shows.
Great.
So hopefully I'll have a show in the future, and one actually seriously very inspired by like the Dave Clark Five, and like kind of like especially Catch Us If You Can. Man, I just love that song, and it just made me think of stories and ideas like listening to songs like that, because they kind of, it told a story in a way, and it was adventurous. So,
thank you.
Just awesome growing up with that kind of music. So thank you.
My pleasure. I'm glad it made you happy.
Thanks, Simon. Have a great weekend.
You too, Rick. And by the way, Rick, if you want to call back in the second half of the show, we talk about Gary Shandling and Joe Graziola and Earl Hamner, we'd love to have you call back in. So you definitely have an open invite for that. Rick Webber, Rick Fred from Philadelphia, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Dave, when we tell people 48 hours ago that you were going to be on the program, one thing I heard from folks on Facebook and Twitter was, my favorite Dave Clark Five song is Because, which was your big ballad in the group's history. A, how did that come together? And B, do you wish you had done more ballads like that?
Well, we did do some good ballads. Come Home was another good ballad. But I wrote it, and then the idea was in England, we had three or four huge, big hit records, Do You Love Me, Glad All Over, Bits and Pieces, and so on. And EMI Records, who I was with in outside of America, wanted to have another up-tempo song, a song called Can't You See That She's Mine? Well, Can't You See That She's Mine was already on an album that was already in the top 10, going to number one by looks, and unfortunately it did. But they wanted to put Because on the B-side, and I thought, well, I've been so lucky as an independent, maybe I should listen to their words of wisdom. I put it on the B-side, and Can't You See didn't get number one, because by then the album was number one with Can't You See on. So when it came to America, again, we'd had four or five huge hits and all up-tempo, rock and roll ravers, and Epic Records refused to release it. And I said, but I want it released, you know. We really believe in it. I believe in the song. No, you can't do it. So I said, well, unless you release it, I'm not going to let you have any more recordings. And I got a telegram or cable, as you say in America, from the president of Epic, who said, it will ruin your career. You've got 48 hours to change your mind or ruin your career. So I sent a telegram back and said, please release it. And they did, and it was one of our biggest selling singles. But I have to say, the president sent me a telegram back saying I was wrong. Congratulations. So it was nice.
Dave, what are you doing these days? How are you spending the time? And what do you think about today's music scene?
I like it. I like it because there's a lot of different types of very talented people. It's gone back to what happened in the 60s, whereas I was saying earlier to your guy who phoned in, Rick, that, you know, it's very much a live music scene. You know, you go from one extreme to like something simple like Ed Sheeran, who's got a great voice, great, great record. But then you go to, you know, whether it's a Justin Timberlake or whoever's in the, you know, already in the charts, there's some great things, you know. Even like the teeny bopper groups like One Direction are making great records, You know, I never thought I'd say that, but they're very well-produced records. Whereas in the 60s, there would be more bubblegum for a very young group, you know.
And how are you passing time? How are you celebrating life these days?
You know, I write. I do what fires me up, you know. You know, there's a few projects I'm involved in. But, you know, I'm very blessed because I've now got the freedom of choice where you're not under pressure. I mean, I wouldn't have missed the DC-5 for the world. It was something I never dreamed of, or none of the boys dreamed of. And it was wonderful, and we had a good 10-year run, and we were all mates. And the wonderful thing is, now looking back at a lot of my contemporaries, we were friends at the beginning, and we were friends even to this day, and we never had a legal letter or dispute between us. And I thought that was great, looking at, you know, what's happened with other people, all being, you know, in a group, you get wound up by different lawyers and different things. And, you know, you start off for the fun of playing the music you enjoy. And I think we were very lucky to be able to do that.
And to quote that lyric from any way you want it, that's the way it should be in these days of increasing entertainment and musical choice. And the great thing is that tonight, if you've never heard the Dave Clark Five at their peak and at their greatness, and their greatness since, here's the opportunity to do it. The special, which is part of great performances on PBS, is the Dave Clark Five and Beyond, Glad All Over. Here in New York, you can see the replay of this program originally made 2 years ago in 2014 on WAT Channel 13, I believe also WLIW in the New York area. That's at 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time tonight. Everyone else, if your PBS station carries great performances tonight, it will be at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. And everywhere else, if your station doesn't carry that hour, it will run it during the weekend or replayed later on. So please check your local listings for the PBS station in your area and when they run great performances. If you want more details about the program, about the Dave Clark Five, and about PBS overall, here's where you go online, www.pbs.org. That's www.pbs.org. And again, I recommend this special. You will hear a wonderful musical group and the great contribution they made to music. The people, by the way, you see talking about Dave Clark and his music, I think you'll really be surprised at just how much they really appreciate what he has done and his group has done for the musical idiom that we live in today. Dave, it has been a fantastic honor to be with you the last half hour. Thank you very much for making the time, and all the greatest to you from here on in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure, Simon. Great talking to you, mate.
Same here. All the greatest. Have a wonderful holiday weekend.
Thank you. Wish all your listeners a happy, happy Easter.
Will do, and beyond. Take care.
Bye.
Dave Clark of the Dave Clark Five joining us live from London. I also want to thank Harry Forbes, the publisher of WAT, for making this interview possible. When we come back, we'll have news notes and we'll pay tribute to Gary Shandling, Earl Hamner of the Walton fame, and Joe Garagiola, among a group of people who have passed on in television the last 48 hours. We will get to all of that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for sports interview with Anne LaVoy. She has the story every weekend from the hottest places in sports with the hottest people in sports. Sports interview with Anne LaVoy, weekends, various times right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, you can check the best of BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. And don't forget, you can check out our program, as well as other Blog Radio programs on podcasts through the new Apple TV 2.0 iTunes podcast app. Welcome back to the second half of our Good Friday 2016 edition of Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. Great to have you aboard. Again, thank you to Dave Clark, live from London, for joining us to talk about the great performance special, the Dave Clark Five and Beyond, Glad All Over, tonight in many markets on PBS, 9 o'clock here locally on WAT and WLIW in New York, and everywhere else in many markets on 10 o'clock Eastern Pacific Time, other places later in the weekend. Again, for more details online about the special and to know more about the Dave Clark Five, PBS.org. We'll get more tomorrow's Tall Lines coming your way, but first, a message from our sponsor at Audible.com. If you love the music of the Dave Clark Five, if you love the music of the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and others who made the British invasion of the 60s happen, and other musical eras as well from then on, well, here's a great way to enjoy them over and over again. It's a trial subscription to Audible.com. It's the Amazon.com division that brings you spoken audio entertainment, information, and inspiration 24/7. And that's thanks to a wonderful catalog of 180,000 titles plus to choose from. And the best part is, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now. And all you got to do to make the magic happen, sign up at this URL, audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. When you do, you get a free month subscription and you get one free audiobook. You can make it a wonderful music from their great catalog of terrific music audiobooks. You can also get audiobooks of PBS specials and programs like Downton Abbey, Great Performances, Nature, Frontline, as well as Charlie Rose's nightly interviews on PBS and Bloomberg Television. It's all available for you, and knowing it's Amazon.com behind Audible, you know the customer service is going to be a big high note. So check it out. One free audiobook, 1 month trial. All you have to do is sign up at this URL anytime. It's audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised. Do so. I think you'll be well rewarded with audio time well spent. And now before we get to the rest of our program today, news notes. CBS will bring back 11 current series for a new season this fall. All three NCIS series, that's The Mothership, New Orleans, and Los Angeles, will return, as will Blue Bloods, The Big Bang Theory, Elementary, Hawaii Five-O, Mom, Madam Secretary, Scorpion, Two Broke Girls, Survivor, and The Amazing Race. None of CBS's rookie series have been picked up yet, along with Criminal Minds and CSI Cyber. Earlier, the network called it a day for Long Runners, The Good Wife, Mike and Molly, and Person of Interest, which begins its final stretch in May. HBO brought Togetherness to a close this afternoon. The creation of brothers Jay and Mark Duplass, Togetherness is more than midway through its second season, which wraps April 10th. HBO offered no rationale for canceling the series, and in a statement, looks forward to more collaborations with the Duplass kin down the road. They also co-produced HBO's Friday Night Night tune, Animals. In a Twitter posting, the Duplasses thanked viewers for watching, and we quote, a personal niche show about sensitive people and the sensitive feelings that they feel sensitively. In a time where you have so many great options on television, we don't take this lightly. Apple's flirtation with original series production continues. The company will partner with music and media entrepreneur Will.i.am on a series about application developers and what they create to play over Apple TV and other devices. Just apart, Alexa's chairman Ben Silverman will be involved as co-developer. Eddie Q, the overseer of Apple TV and related ventures, says this project was, and we quote, right up our alley. However, he did not confirm earlier reports of Apple developing Vital Signs, a scripted series by Dr. Dre, or suggestions Apple will make a big original series commitment in the months ahead. For the second time in 3 years, the Daytime Emmy Awards will be off television after a rebound return on Pop Network last spring. The National Academy of TV Arts and Sciences decided to break its agreement with Pop to run this year's presentation, set for May 1st in Los Angeles. The issue, production costs. And the Emmy Award people will not say much more beyond that. As of the daytime nominations announced yesterday, CBS led the broadcast networks with 77. PBS had 66, and 59 went to a group of syndicated content players. Nickelodeon led the cable networks with 24 nominations. Netflix had 33, while Amazon Studios earned 14, 10 for its series Androids. The Young and the Restless was tops for individual series with 27. All four broadcast daytime soaps, we're talking Y&R, The Bold and Beautiful, General Hospital, and Days of Our Lives are up in the Best Drama category. Our game show contenders, Jeopardy, The Price is Right, Let's Make a Deal, and two shows with Millionaire in their title, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and the syndicated Monopoly Millionaires Club, which will wrap up its second and final season syndication later this year. And that is news notes for today. Because we want to spend the rest of our time dealing with the passings of some very iconic people in the world of television, namely the trio of Gary Shandling, Joe Graziola, and Earl Hebner, we're not going to give you the answer to this week's classic trivia question today. We're going to keep it in play into next week. So if you didn't get in on the game this week, you can get in the game starting Monday. and we've got up for grabs the wonderful first novel by acclaimed TV writer-producer John Wilder, Nobody Dies in Hollywood, published by Balcony 7. So check us out on Monday. Listen for the question. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. When you get involved, please enclose your name and your mailing address. If you first with the correct answer, you will win that prize. You can also use Twitter to get your answer in. Just use the Twitter hashtag TWBT. That's Twitter hashtag TWBT. And if you missed the question on Monday, don't worry. We'll post again Tuesday morning on my Facebook page and my own Twitter hashtag at UBC Simon TWBT. That's at UBC Simon TWBT. How we participate, get in there and win. We do appreciate you being involved. Well, for the rest of this half hour, we're going to spend it showcasing and paying tribute to three people who all passed away over the last 48 hours. I've been covering television for a very long time, and I have, in a long, long time, not seen so many wonderful, iconic people in television pass away in so short a time, the last 48 hours. And we'll begin with Gary Shandling. He broke through in the 1980s as a comedian regular on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, eventually becoming a substitute host, and a chance to see his breakthrough performance on The Tonight Show last night. It is as funny and fresh as it was when he did it back in the early 1980s. But it was two television series that labeled him for all time among the top TV series creators ever in any genre. First, in 1986, it was It's Gary Shandling's Show, the show where Gary plays a comedian like himself, and he breaks the fourth wall. He actually shattered the fourth wall, the wall that was set up so wonderfully by George Burns and Gracie Allen in their classic 1950s comedy series. But when it came to the fourth wall, Gary went lots of steps beyond. He got the audience and the studio involved. He got the camera crew involved. He got the producers and directors involved. Everyone was fair game for the show, and the result was hilarity, first on Showtime, and then at one point, simulcast on Fox. It was a marvelous show, ran four seasons. And it's amazing that in a lot of tributes to Shandling so far, since last night, that program has not been given its due. It really ought to. Because it was that program and what he did with it that set up the other big program, the bigger program in his life, the Larry Sanders Show, that started on HBO in 1990, ran for six seasons, is now considered one of the great classics of all time in television. Gary, of course, played something close to home, a late-night talk show. And he skewered the medium along with it. He played someone who was, well, not at ease being a talk show when he was not actually on camera. And, of course, he had the wonderful memorable performances by Rip Torn as producer and Jeffrey Tambor as his sidekick. We still remember some of those wonderful scenes from that show. And it was an absolute ball to watch Gary Shandling at work. Then, of course, there were comedy specials. There were appearances on the shows. There were movies. But already, Gary had cemented his position in television with his Gary Shandling Show and with the Larry Sanders Show. It's really hard to believe that Gary passed on, especially since he was in fine shape. As some of you may know by now, he was rushed to the hospital in Los Angeles, suffering from chest pains. He apparently died of a heart attack, and despite the best care possible, he passed away. He succumbed to the situation. And it's really remarkable because he just did an appearance on Jerry Seinfeld's Crackle series, Comedian in Cars Getting Coffee, where the subject of death came up. How ironic. Gary was an incredible talent, and we will all miss him. And I thought the tributes last night by Conan O'Brien, by Seth Meyers, were so apt, were so right on target. It was really wonderful. In addition to Shandling passing away, there was also Earl Hamner. Behind the scenes, Earl Hamner created one of the great family shows of all time in the 1970s, The Waltons. It wasn't the first time that his autobiographical family came to life. Back in the early 1960s, there was a film that he was involved in called Spencer's Mountain, based on a novel he created about his family, starring Henry Fonda and Maureen O'Hara. It was a slight success for Warner Brothers at the time, although it's been seen many times over in the years on Turner Classic Movies. A terrific film. And it later became the basis for a special on CBS called The Homecoming. It was telecast during Christmas season with wonderful, unforgettable performances by Patricia Neal as the mother and Andrew Duggan as the father. And that's what led to The Waltons. It was a gamble to do a period family piece at the time, but they went forward with it thanks to the brilliance of Law & Mar executive producer Lee Rich and Earl Hamner, who created the first scripts and worked with a great group of writers, including John McGreevy and John Furrier Jr. The director by Harry Harris and Lee Phillips did their thing. And then the wonderful cast, led by Richard Thomas as John Boy, Michael Earn as the mother, Ralph Way as the father, and on and on, including an early TV performance by John Ritter as a preacher. The Waltons was wonderful television, and like many great shows, did not do well the first year. It was in danger of cancellation. But the viewers responded. CBS knew it had something magical on its possible hands, and kept it going, and it ran for nearly a decade. And the show got better and better and better. It stayed its Thursday 8 p.m. time period. It became a stalwart for television at that time, and it ended up being one of the great family shows of all time. Later on, Hamner would create Falcon Crest. He would do Apple's Way for a year and a half, also on CBS. Another wonderful series, short-lived, called Boom. And another terrific series for CBS that, sad to say, did not run as long as it should have, called Morning Star, Evening Star, created, I believe, with Norman Lear. In addition, Hamner created hundreds of scripts for other shows, most notably The Twilight Zone. One of his hour-long episodes for the show was a classic called Jeff Bell. And like many of his best scripts, they were rooted in the times of Appalachia. It was rooted in period pieces. And Hamner had a great gift for the colloquialism, the mannerism, the speechisms of that time. And Jeff Bell was a great example of that, led by a cast including Anne Francis, and the great character actor, very underrated at the time and still is, James Best. And it was one of the few Twilight Zone episodes that did not end with a Rod Serling narration. It ended with a song, again, a song of the period. Jeff Bell was wonderful, magical television, and one of the best things that Earl Hamner ever did. And like Earl Hamner, by the way, he also, like Rod Serling, worked at a local station in Ohio, where he developed his craft. Earl Hamner passed away yesterday after a brilliant career. And to the end, he wrote well into his 90s. He was, I think, 93 when he passed away after suffering a year and a half from cancer. He happened to succumb with his family at his side, and knowing how much he was loved by not only his family, but the world at large. And finally among the three, there was Joe Graziella, one of the most wonderful people I think you could ever come to know, at least what people say about him. Joe Graziella, of course, was a baseball player, played 9 years in the major leagues, but then he decided to make a career in media, first as a radio play-by-play announcer for baseball, and then a television announcer. He got his break in the 1960s by doing baseball play-by-play on the national level for NBC. And then in the 70s, he became the main play-by-play announcer for baseball's Game of the Week with his sidekick, commentator Tony Kubek. They were an unforgettable team for nearly a decade. And then when Vin Scully came along in 1984 over from CBS, the great Las Vegas Dodgers announcer, who this year, by the way, will be his last year calling Dodger games, Scully was the play-by-play. Graziella moved over to commentary. But by that time, Graziella had also developed another wonderful tool by being TV personality. First, with his wonderful run on the Today Show as a co-host and regular contributor, and then as a game show host and a panel host for shows like What's My Line, and then his own shows like He Said, She Said, Joe Graziella's Memory Game, which later He Said, She Said became later the foundation for Tattletales, the long-run show with Bert Condi in CBS daytime syndication. And he also did Strike and Rich in the 1980s. And he later became not just a panelist, but also the host of the final season of the syndicated Tell the Truth that was hosted by Gary Moore in most of the 1970s and late 1960s. Excuse me. Throughout that time, we all did Sail the Century. For most of its run when he replaced Jack Kelly, the Maverick co-star on that series. No matter what show he was on, Joe Graziella had that always everyman appeal. He was someone you liked to be around, someone you could crack jokes with, someone who just came across as just a nice, regular person. And that, I think, was his appeal throughout his career, and also as a baseball play-by-play person. He always had stories to tell. One thing you want to know, he also, before he was a play-by-play person, he was also a pregame host and did a wonderful series for a number of years on NBC called The Baseball World of Joe Graziella. I wish somebody had kept episodes of that show. I saw it a couple of times when it was on. It was wonderful. It showed the offbeat side of sports. It was not what you normally – it did directions that you not only did with a pregame show, and he happened to win a Peabody Award for that program. Very unexpected. Joe Graziella was just a fun person, and in later years he became a regular commentator on the Arizona Diamondback games. And I'll tell you, his death on Wednesday really shocked a lot of people, and certainly shocked the people in Arizona that he'd been around for almost 20 years. Joe was a wonderful commentator and a treasure of a person. From what people tell you, he was a treasure of a person to be around. And he, along with Earl Hamner and Gary Shandling, will be profoundly missed. Like I said, it's been an absolute shock to hear one after the other these terrific, terrific talents of television, both in front and behind the camera, pass on. And I'd love to hear from you. What do you think about Gary Shandling or Earl Hamner and or Joe Reggiola? We'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway to catch us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. You also use our chat room, 7-Apple-04. My name is Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, and guests 933 are in the room. So we'd love to have you call and have you here. And just before we went on the air, we learned that yet another wonderful TV talent also passed on, Tom Whedon. He is the father of Josh Whedon, yes, the creator of such shows as Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But Tom Whedon was also a wonderful writer-producer of television in his own right. He was an Emmy Award winner in 1973. He produced and or wrote for such shows as Benson, All's Fair, and the Golden Girls. And he was also one of the key writers with John Stone on Sesame Street and on The Electric Company for the Children's Television Workshop. He and John and other people there, and of course the president of the workshop, Joan Gans Cooney, set the pace for a wonderful era of children's television that may never in a way be seen again, thanks to his wonderful work. And have you heard, Tom Whedon passed away, I believe he was 83 years old, from earlier today. Actually, the announcement was made earlier this afternoon, about an hour before he went on the air, but he actually passed away on Wednesday. And once again, it's just amazing to believe that all these wonderful talents all in the last 48 hours took their leave of this earth. Rick Webb is back with us, live with us from Philadelphia. Rick, thanks for making the second call. And thanks again for the question you had to Dave Clark.
Oh, thanks for having Dave Clark on. It was an honor to speak with him.
Absolutely. A fantastic honor. Again, I want to thank Harry Forbes, the publisher of WAT13, who made that possible and really went the extra mile to have Dave on. Again, I thank Dave for making the time on a Friday night, on a holiday Friday night, I might add, in his native London to be with us. Dave, what are your recollections of Gary? How should we remember Gary Shandling and Joe Graziola and Earl Hamner? And isn't it amazing, like me, that all these people have passed on in so short a time?
Well, I was just thinking about how there's so many celebrities nowadays because of, you know, sports being on television and you know, just the film business is bigger, the music business is bigger, that from now on, I guess we're going to be seeing this more and more. It just seems like so many people have passed away recently, but maybe that's going to keep happening because there's so much more celebrities. So, I mean, that's one thing that I was thinking of. But otherwise, like Gary Shandling, it's a shame that he wasn't recognized for his genius more while alive, as happens so often. As unfortunately, he passed away, and now everyone's saying, "Wow, looking back, he really changed television." And I never thought of it that way either, even though I was right there while it was happening. So.
And Rick, he was also the forerunner of a certain kind of comedy, a comedy that later became big with people like Stephen Wright and also Jerry Seinfeld in particular. The comedy about little things, the nothing things, the little sidelights of life that we take for granted. Shandling had this wonderful way. I still remember, as I said last night, I saw the first Tonight Show appearance where he showcases a pen that was taken from a bank with the string with the pen in it, and he just got waves of laughter from it. He just had this wonderful way of taking little things in life or things that we like, the detail that runs by us, and he could just make great jokes out of it.
Yeah, and I wonder how much of that comes from his, like, he started in advertising, And I wonder how much of it comes from some of that and having to be detailed and try and make something as boring as possibly a pen or a toilet paper seem like something really important in our lives and monumental. So it's kind of interesting to me, the thought processes that someone like that must have went through. And it did. He inspired so many different people with that type of comedy that was, to me, new.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, too, with Earl Hamner and the Waltons, a lot were incident-oriented. There was really no, recurring arc to the show. It was always every week was an incident involving the whole family or a member of the family or several members of the family. And Hamner and his writers had this wonderful feel for human values and for people just being people, not breaking them up, turning them down, turning them inside out, making it beyond what they would be. And the directing was always understated. The music by Jerry Goldsmith and Alexander Courage. It was this wonderful feel that you were back in time to a wonderful place where people just respected each other or tried to respect each other.
Yeah, it seemed like kind of a writer's dream TV show, where, like you were saying, the directing was kind of understated, the scenery at times, even though sometimes beautiful, a lot of times that was muted or understated as well. And it was a real writer's medium, kind of a writer's dream, which is kind of happening on television again today with a lot of screenwriters crossing over to television. So that's what I just remember, just being a smart and well-written show.
And if there is a connecting point with Gary Shandling, with Earl Hamner, and with Joe Graziola, maybe it's this. When you hear the tributes from people, they all say the same thing. Who they were on camera was as much off camera. They were wonderful people to be around. They really cared about you. They wanted to coach and mentor you if you were new to the business. They were engaging to be around. They weren't people who were like one personality on camera and totally different beyond the camera.
Well, I wouldn't know too much about that. I don't believe that I ever met any of them, unfortunately. But they were all, kind of inspirational. And even Joe Garagiola, where it was that everyday or that everyman type of situation where he grew up across the street from Yogi Berra, which is amazing. The two of the most famous catchers of all time grew up across the street from each other. But he was sort of self-deprecating the same way Gary Shandling was with his comedy, saying he was never the best catcher in the major leagues. He was never even the best catcher on his own block. So that's kind of interesting, that same sort of self-deprecating type of humor. It was almost like Joe Garagiola was the, Gary Shandling of baseball in a way.
Absolutely. Rick, we have to cut off because we're running out of time. Thank you for the added comments. Again, have a wonderful weekend, my friend.
You too, Simon. Thank you.
We will be back Monday, Tuesday, and Friday right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Monday and Friday at our regular time period. Tuesday with the people from the Powerpuff Girls an hour earlier than normal. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not through those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your Good Friday Easter weekend. If you celebrate Easter, make it a safe and great one. We're back on Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.